Welcome back to Kings of Columbus here on the podcast. Doug Lamorese, Bill Landis, and we're getting ready for the NFL draft. We're going to do a couple things on this show, Bill. One is we're going to predict, you and I will predict, where every Buckeye actually in the 2024 NFL draft will be selected on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. This is something that we have done going back to our Cleveland.com days where we had a bell and we would sit in a circle. You and Ari and I would sit in a circle and we had a bell and I would go like, pick 86. Pick eight. It was such good podcasting. And then you'd have to reach over and ring the bell when you want to take a guy. You said very specifically, no bell this time.
Well, we're not in the same room. If we were in the same room, I'd be all about the bell, but we're not, okay. Unfortunately. Yeah.
So we're just going to make our predictions. We're not going to, because I did like it. Like when you have that, it's like it makes you take guys earlier because it's like, yeah. Oh, I really want to take Malik Harrison. I got to take him now, which is actually how the draft works. But we're just going to predict Tommy Eichenberg and Cade Stover and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Mike Hall Jr. and everybody else. We'll do that in the second part of the show. We'll end the show with what you're watching, what you're eating, what you're thinking. I watched a terrible thing. So we'll talk about that.
Oh, right.
But we're going to start by doing a unique draft where we are going to draft 16 players from Ohio State's current roster. So this is not the guys going. So no Marvin Harrison Jr., no Mike Hall, no guys like that. But everybody else who is currently on the team, we are going to draft them based on what we think they will be as NFL prospects, like eventually. And I guess it's sort of like if you had a draft now, right? And everybody was eligible. It's kind of like that. I also kind of took it into like, well, this is what I think these guys are going to become by mm-hmm. the time it is their time. So it's kind of a combination, because if you were saying like, okay, well, NFL teams are going to have to evaluate guys now who have never played a snap of college football, it'd be so difficult. But I think people understand what we're doing here. We're trying to figure out who are and will be the best NFL draft prospects. And we're going to draft everybody eligible right now. Did I explain it right?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. We're trying to evaluate like ceiling, I guess, right?
Yeah. And here's how difficult this will be. So I just checked very quickly. I checked the 2019 Ohio State football roster. Then I went through everybody and I tried to figure out how many of those guys off that roster were picked in the NFL draft. And I will say there are multiple guys like in this draft still who were on that roster in 2019. Tommy Eichenberg was on that roster. Cade Stover was on that roster. Josh Proctor was on that roster. Jonte Jean-Baptiste, who I don't know, out of Notre Dame now, could get picked, mm-hmm. was on that roster. Bryson Shaw was on that roster. He's in this draft, isn't he? Right? I think Bryson Shaw from USC, I think, is on. So anyway, they're not done with how many 2019 Buckeyes will be drafted, okay? Mm-hmm. But so far, how many Ohio State Buckeyes from the 2019 team do you think have been drafted?
29.
Oh, that's such a good guess. It's 28. How many first rounders?
Oh, quick math. 11?
Oh, no, not that. 7.
That's high. Yeah, 7.
Jeff Okuda, Chase Young, Damon Arnett. Everyone's favorite first rounder, Justin Fields, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, and Jameson Williams out of Alabama.
Juice man.
So overall from that team, 7 first rounders, 4 second rounders, 7 third rounders. So that's 18 guys, and we're only going to draft 16. So kind of the threshold is everybody that we're going to take in our draft right here, we think is going to be a first, second, or third round pick in the NFL. That's not an unreasonable threshold, right?
Nope, I don't think so. No. I know. Okay. I think I would consider all the guys that I was looking at to be of that caliber, or eventually.
Okay, and I sent 20 players in a ranking list to our tech subscribers, 614-662-4509 if you want to get in on that. $6 a month. You get a 2-week free trial to try it out. Rank, homework, rank these 20 guys. Ugh, slide this guy up, slide this guy down. But everybody did that. So we'll have that as a reference. As you and I go through this draft, we'll say, oh, well, the texters picked this guy here. So again, people understand this. We're drafting people like Denzel Burke and Jack Sawyer and guys who could be in this draft right now, along with players like Caleb Downs and Jeremiah Smith and the young quarterbacks there, Nolan and Julian Sayin, mm-hmm. and Jelani Thurman, and like anybody you want who's never played, just like way back then, you know, you could have drafted Cade Stover as a, and if we had a draft in 2019, we'd be like, ah, I think this guy's going to be a great linebacker. That's what you would have done, right?
Yeah.
I still think
he could be a great linebacker.
I think this guy's the next James Laurinaitis. I'm taking him eighth. It's like, he's a what? So that's where we are. All right. I'm going to give you the first pick because I don't want it. If I wanted it, I'd take it.
Okay. Before I make my pick, I want to say, shout out to the one texter who got back to us and said, I'm not ranking these players. The list is too long.
Yes.
which I appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like, we need, and I will say the texters are saved by the fact that the ranking mechanism we need only goes to 20.
You're going to give them 30. Oh, there was one of them. There was one name that was not on there that I was going to ask you about. And I guess it was just because you ran out of space.
So I in the end, I can't remember who I took off. There was, I wanted one more spot. I can't remember who it was, but maybe you'll take them.
Or no. Yeah. CJ Hicks.
Yeah. CJ Hicks wasn't on there. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it really kind of got down to it with some guys of like, as much as we love CJ Hicks, like he's kind of not really played a meaningful snap at the position he actually plays yet. So
right.
But that's the point. Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to take 16. There were 20 for the Texans. We're going to take 16. Pick number one to you.
Give me Jeremiah Smith.
Okay. So let's have this conversation in tandem, because you and I were having this conversation with someone else about this, and I'll take Julian Sayin second.
Yeah.
So we are talking about a freshman receiver in Jeremiah Smith and a freshman quarterback in Julian Sayin, and with so much deserved and understandable focus on all these players who stayed at Ohio State for this year, and the understandable and deserved focus on what is going to happen with this 2024 Ohio State Buckeye team, it has allowed us, and I love the future. Everybody loves the future. The present, everyone's like, present. The past, no one cares. Like, the past is over the second it happens. Nobody in sports cares about the past. It's the young people today don't. They, with their TikToks, they don't know about the past. Everybody loves the future, though. We're not talking about the future with Ohio State because the present is so magnified. Yeah. But by the way, in 2025 and 2026, is Ohio State going to have the best quarterback receiver combination, not only in the nation, but in recent college football? Like, what are we potentially talking about here with Julian Sayin and Jeremiah Smith?
Yeah, no, I think that. I mean, like, Ohio State would have some pretty serious contenders, right? Like CJ and Marvin, or CJ and pick an Olave or Wilson, or Justin Fields and pick an Olave or Wilson, I guess. Like they've been loaded at those two positions. So, like, I'm not trying to say that it's an easy thing for this particular duo to try to achieve. But, yeah, I think, like, I don't think Jeremiah Smith will quite reach I'm the best receiver in college football status this year. But he'll be there going into a sophomore year, and I'll have that for 2 years. And like Julian Sayin, I think by the time his career is over, certainly is in the conversation to be the best quarterback in college football. Like, and the thing to consider with Julian when it comes to like draft stock, if that's what we're trying to discern a little bit, is like he's not the biggest guy in the world. So like maybe that will impact him when his time comes. But from a talent standpoint, like he is a very highly regarded quarterback. Like he is, I think in the last 5 years, like one of the better quarterback prospects that has come out. Like, I don't think people like threw the same kind of tags that were thrown like at Quinn Ewers or Caleb Williams necessarily, but I think he's pretty close to that in terms of what people think about him. So if that comes to fruition, then yeah, he's going to be, if not the best, like one of the best, certainly in college football. And then Jeremiah is a freak.
Did you consider taking Sayin first, or were you all aboard the Jeremiah train?
I'm all aboard the Jeremiah train. And that was my way of saying that, like, I'm like a 10 out of 10. Jeremiah Smith is going to be the man. And I'm like a 9 out of 10, I guess, on Julian Sayin. Yeah. So I picked a 10 out of 10 first.
And we understand quarterbacks obviously are the most valuable thing in the NFL draft. And so if Julian Sayin winds up being the best quarterback in his draft class, he would go ahead of Jeremiah Smith. The world where a receiver would go ahead of a quarterback is hard to imagine these days. But I wouldn't even call it a hedge. It's just like, Jeremiah Smith is getting ready to do it right now. and has shown people this spring what he's going to be. And Julian saying right now is like the third quarterback. Should we, this is not the place for the conversation. How far on the back burner is Julian Sain winding up as Ohio State's starting quarterback sometime in the 2024 season? Because when you, I think I've mentioned like the Tua Tagovailoa situation in Alabama, but are we that, is this that different than Clemson when they started the year with Kelly Bryant and then got to Trevor Lawrence by like week five and then won the national title with a true freshman quarterback? Like, is that, and frankly, Kelly Bryant was like more established than Will Howard and Devin Brown are. Kelly Bryant had like led Clemson to the number one seed in the playoff rankings the year before.
Yeah.
So, like, is that crazy or not crazy?
I don't. It's not off the table for me. The different dynamic here is Ohio State's quarterback room for the moment has remained intact. So, like, how many people do you have to go through before you get to Julian Sain once you move on from Will Howard? Maybe there's a Devin Brown there still, or even a Lincoln Keenholz. Like, I tend to believe that right now Julian Sain is quarterback three. That's just my opinion. I'm not saying like that's what is the belief in the Woody, but I think he's already the third. Like, if it really came down to it, if he really had to stack him up, I think he's already the third. So by the time we get to the fall, you want to tell me he's QB2 and you want to give him a look. I think it's within the realm of possibility. Is it likely? I don't know, but possible.
I wonder if something could happen in the middle of the season where Ryan Day thinks what we have at quarterback can absolutely get us through this regular season and get us the number one seed in the playoff and whatever. But like, I don't know if we can win it all with this. So let's get to the quarterback that I think gives us the best chance to get over the top. But we don't want to get there in game 14. We want to get there in game 7 to give him time to grow. Like, I think, especially depending how that Oregon game looks, right? It's, and again, it's not dissimilar. Again, like, how dissimilar is this from Terrell Pryor and Todd Beckman in 2008, where it's like, okay, Todd Beckman led Ohio State to the national championship game the year before, but like, this guy is here. And they got blown out by USC and Jim Tressel made a change. So like, it's, how much do you guys talk about Sain on Podcast Daily? Like, you having like a gazillion Julian Sain conversations or not really?
No, we had, it got pretty hot like in the middle of spring, I think.
Okay.
But not a ton. Yeah.
Yeah. Just worth keeping in mind, like, what we're talking about here. We just took him number. Do you agree that he should have gone in the top two? I took him second. Would you have done that?
I think these are the top two. Yeah.
Okay. So like, again, it's a reminder of the future here. But the future can come at you pretty fast, man.
Yeah.
So future could be like late October. All right. By the way, our texters picked Jeremiah Smith first, and they picked Julian Sain third. So,
oh, interesting.
I will now. But again, this is like, again, I just don't know that that's where, and I know that there was kind of a thing in the middle of spring practice. Everybody's like, can a true freshman be Ohio State starting quarterback? I know that was a moment, but if 2020 they didn't have so many veteran good players, I think the conversation would be different, right? But it's just like this conversation is all about right now. So I understand why he wasn't the top two for the Texters, because they're reacting to how we talk about and write about this team. Who are you taking third?
So before I make my pick, I want to ask a clarifying question about what we're doing. Are you picking guys like based on where you actually think they're going to get picked in the draft? Like, if you think a guy's going to be the 7th pick in the draft, you're going to take him ahead of a guy you think who might be the 13th pick in the draft? Or are you just saying like, I think this guy, or are you trying to just be more about like who's going to be the better NFL player?
No, I mean, I think it's where we think they'll be picked, because again, there's a difference between being a player and a draft prospect. And so I think like, if we were trying to say, we're going to go back and grade this, you know, so we're going to draft all these guys, and if a guy goes in the top 5, you get this many points. He goes in the top 10, you get this many points. So you just want to pick guys like you think will go highest in the NFL draft whenever they go pro.
Okay. I'm going to pick Caleb Downs. I was uncertain only because of like the way the NFL values positions. Like maybe a defensive lineman could go ahead of him. Highest drafted safeties ever are Sean Taylor and Eric Berry, right? Number five overall. Never been a safety drafted higher than that. Not to put too much on the kid, but like I think he's got that kind of potential. So like I think that Caleb Downs is like almost like safely a top 15 pick and has the ceiling of being in the top 10 for sure. So I'll take him. Like I think he, it's always a hard thing. Like you can't quantify it, right? It's just a matter of opinion, I suppose. But like I think Caleb Downs has the chance to be considered like the best football player in the country. Just like that dude on the football field, give me him. I'll figure out where to put him, and I know he'll be good. I think he's got that kind of potential because he's not just an incredible athlete. Like he's, I think he is incredibly smart as a football player, and just like studious, and like his whole life has just been about like learning football. And it just so happens that he's immensely talented on top of that. So, like we've seen some really good ones here, right? I can't remember where did like Malik Hooker went. Where I can't remember exactly.
I think 15 was in
the draft. 15, right? That was after being a 1 year starter. So like if you're like Caleb Downs, 3 years of being like a borderline All-American at safety, which is I think what we're going to get for him. Like I think he's going to get drafted higher than Malik Hooker, certainly, and like be the next guy we talk about when we ask like whether or not a safety could ever go higher than Sean Taylor or Eric Berry. Like I know those guys are like absolute legends at the position. I'm not telling you right now that I think Caleb Downs is better than those guys, but it's just like a like you know sometimes rare dudes come along, and I think Caleb Downs has that potential to be considered like a similar kind of rare prospect at the position.
So the Texans took Downs second. Is this a clear top three? And these are two freshmen and a sophomore. Are they the clear top three? Like in your mind, do you think everybody watching and listening, if they really thought about it, would arrive at these three?
I think so. Yeah.
So it's two guys that came from Alabama and another guy that they like held on by their fingernails in the last hours of the recruiting process to keep him away from Miami. Like this is remarkable. There is certainly a world where none of these guys are in Columbus. Yes.
Yeah. We're pretty close to that happening. Yeah.
We are. I mean, if Nick Saban doesn't retire and like, yeah, the wind blows a different direction in South Florida.
Yeah.
And here we are as like the consensus top three guys. And PFF did an interesting exercise. There are times in the offseason when I have my fill of PFF. I'm like, okay. But then they come up with something interesting. They did a thing kind of like this where it's the draft class. So we are like not including guys in the current draft class. And I guess we could, like, it actually would be kind of interesting. Like, where would Marv be with these three? If we were doing everybody, like, where would Marv be in here? Marv would certainly make it, I think, a consensus top four. But would Marv be fourth? Would he be third? Would we really put Jeremiah Smith ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr.? What would we do?
I think Marv and JJ would be the top two. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they did this exercise where they took the current draft class. So like including guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., but also everybody else in college football and said, who would be picked if everybody in college football is eligible for this draft? And they did a full first round and they did position rankings. They took one sophomore in the first round and it was Caleb Downs. They made him the 26th pick in the draft, and they listed Caleb Downs as the best safety draft prospect in the country, and he's played 1 year of college football. So, like, that's what we're talking about here. That is crazy. Does it get difficult now? Like, is there a consensus number four guy, or are you like, thank goodness I'm not taking fourth, I don't know what Doug's going
to
do?
No, I am happy to not have the fourth pick. I will say, like, I felt a decent amount of clarity with the guy that I picked fourth, but I do think you could go a number of ways reasonably.
Okay. I think I'm going to go kind of off the board and continue the trend of the top three, but it's certainly not what our texters did.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll take Sonny Styles.
Oh, wow.
And
that's not at all what I had in mind. Okay, go ahead.
Like, what is he going to be? And this is one of those where, like, Brian Urlacher played safety in college and then played linebacker in the NFL, right? Now, Sonny is making that move now. And it's like, well, you don't take linebackers that high, but, like, special game-changing defensive players you take this high? And maybe he winds up being a safety again in the NFL. Maybe he winds up being, like, a game-changing nickel. And I think we are, again, talking about, like, a supremely intelligent, skilled guy. And I almost feel like in the hubbub around Caleb Downs and CJ Hicks and this position move for him, again, I don't want to live in a world where Sonny Styles is not like a bona fide sure thing on the field with your top 11 defenders all the time, but I don't know if we're inching toward that world. You think this is a reach, or like if I'm trying to think about it, of like maximizing almost like a positionless awesome player? He's Ryan Shazier. Ryan Shazier, I think, was the 15th pick in the draft. Like, I don't know what he is, but you kind of put him near the line of scrimmage and let him go crazy, and he's going to be a great NFL player.
So yeah, no, I don't think it's crazy. It's not where I was, but I think you're onto something with the like the intrigue that would be surrounding a guy like Sonny, that will be surrounding a guy like Sonny when he comes out, just because like there aren't a lot of dudes who are his size that can run like him and play the number of positions that I think he's able to play. And like Isaiah Simmons, I think is a name that'll probably get tossed around a lot when Sonny's coming out. Isaiah Simmons was the eighth pick. It was the eighth pick in the draft, and like that hasn't really hit, I think, the way people thought.
No.
Different physical profile, but like ability to do a lot of different things. Like Kyle Hamilton last year, was the 14th pick in the draft, I think, and he looks like he's going to be a stud. So like that is valued for sure. Like that kind of versatility is like Caleb Downs is versatile too. Like that's part of the sell on him too. He can probably play anywhere in your secondary. And Sonny's not quite that, but like Sonny can probably play at all three levels reasonably well in college and in the NFL. So like I get it. I had Sonny on my list, but down a little further only because I have some hesitancy about exactly like what he is or like what he's going to develop into. But the NFL is also mostly about like traits, and Sonny's are off the charts. So I can see this. It's not where I was, but I definitely get what you're putting down.
Now, the hard thing about this is like, this is his third year. So this, like, he could go after this year. And if it's like, it takes a little bit, I mean, maybe it'd be one of those where if it like, it doesn't lock in right away at linebacker, maybe he stays for a fourth year. I don't know. But if he falls into a crack, I'm going to run in circles through the team room, like when Jim Knowles is doing interviews and be screaming, like, what are you doing? Cause like, I understand there's a lot of like that you can't have that. Like this is what coaching is. You take great players and you put them in the best position to succeed. And you can't just live in a world where it's like, well, you know, we couldn't take that. No, he's like one of your five best defensive players. Find a way. So anyway, I'm preparing myself already. It'll be fine. Yeah. I'm preparing myself though, but it'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be fine. Fifth pick to you. Oh, Sonny was ninth for the Texters, by the way. So, ninth.
Okay.
Where would he have been on your list?
I had him 15th.
Oh, man. Okay. I reached. Yeah. Well, I'm not trying to win. I'm just trying to be right.
No, but I'm probably, you've also swayed me too. Like, I probably was not thinking about him. I let my uncertainty could probably get the best of me. I should have had him higher. Yeah.
All right. Fifth pick to you.
I'm going to take Denzel Burke.
Okay, that's probably who I would have taken if I didn't take Sonny.
Okay. I was skeptical after Denzel's freshman season. I was like this guy is definitely like the best corner among a group of corners, frankly, who weren't really good. And then I think a lot of people after his sophomore year, I was like, I don't know, maybe that was just a flash in the pan. And even last year, like I wasn't 100% convinced for most of last year that he was like definitely going to be a first rounder. And maybe I'm not even all the way convinced now, like I want to see one more season, but I think he's on that trajectory. Like, he wants to be like a top 10 pick. I don't know if he's quite that, but I feel a little more confident today than I did probably a year ago that he can like bring back the lineage of first round corners at Ohio State and be like the first guy to like to help reset that a little bit, if that makes sense. So I'm like, and I know like everyone loves Denzel, like everyone knows he's very good, but in terms of like NFL ceiling, his NFL ceiling might even be higher maybe than people want to give him credit for, me included. So I just feel like very certain that he's going to be a good pro, like a very good pro. And like there are other guys that we could pick here that have like a ton of upside, but it's like, I don't know, maybe that doesn't quite work out. Like with Denzel, I think it's going to work out.
So I have a little hesitation because I'm not 1,000% sure he will wind up being the best NFL draft prospect at corner on this roster.
Fair.
But I almost took him, and I was surprised in this PFF exercise, if everybody was eligible, he was not in their top 10 corners, which I was a little surprised by. Like a guy like Will Johnson at Michigan was, in that group. I think Will Johnson actually might have been one among their corners who he's not eligible to be in this draft. He's so,
yeah. I think PFF had Denzel like seventh or eighth on their top 10 returning corners this year and like fifth in the Big Ten or something like that.
Okay. So I don't know. That's not the be all end all. It's not why I didn't take him, but I agree with this. I think this is a really good pick and I do think he'll be a first rounder. But when we're talking about like top of the first round, I'm getting like some hesitation here of like, are we talking like top 10 picks? Like we might be out of them. So I'm not sure about this. I'll take Jack Sawyer.
I think we're at either one of the ends now. Yeah.
So Jack Sawyer, when they did this exercise, was the number 8 edge guy. If every edge defender in college football was eligible for this draft. So again, that's a reminder. Again, for this exercise for PFF, they had 8 Buckeyes who made the top 10 at their individual positions. Only 2 are actually in the draft. Marvin Harrison Jr. and Cade Stover. The other 6 are playing for Ohio State this year. But if they were in the draft, they'd be one of the 10 best guys at their position. That's what we're talking about here. I don't think Jack's a first rounder right now, but I think we are continuing on the upward trend line, building off the way he played in the second half of last season, that if he continues that and has like a big sack year and is just like super disruptive and is the best pass rusher on this team. I don't know. Someone made it like an Aiden Hutchinson leap. Like Aiden Hutchinson at Michigan came back for a 4th year when he was pretty good after year 3. Like, I don't think that's completely off the table. And Aiden Hutchinson was the 2nd pick in the draft. So like, I'm not predicting Jack Sawyer is going to be the 2nd pick in the draft, but he could go crazy and make himself a top 10 pick. Yes.
Yeah, I think he could. He is. So I had him next to, like I said, like, I think he can go either defensive end in this position if he wanted to, he or JT Tuimoloau. But I had Jack ahead of JT. Oh, and maybe part of that is like unfair to JT because we just like seen more of him. And because we've seen a little bit less of Jack, like you're able to kind of grab on more to the idea that there's something more for him to get to. And it's not that JT is a bad player. Like JT is going to be a really good pro too, but they're, if we've been waiting for one of them to like make that leap to become a guy who's going to have double digit sacks, I think if you polled 100 Ohio State fans, maybe 100 of them would say like, no, it's going to be Jack.
Yeah.
Like that's going to get there. Right. So I kind of feel the same way. Whether that's Aiden Hutchinson leap, I don't know, but I think he's got it in him to have a season that pushes him like comfortably into the first round.
I took Jack Sawyer 6th. The Texters also had Jack Sawyer 6th. Yeah. So, 5 of the top 6 for the Texters have been taken. They had Smith 1, Downs 2, Sayan 3, Burke 5, Sawyer 6, and Styles 9. Those are our picks so far. Pick 7 to you.
Yeah, so I'll take JT, and like everything I said like still applies there. And like maybe the upside as like a menace of a pass rusher is not quite there. But JT also, I think, has inside-outside versatility at the NFL, which will be coveted and I think help him when his time comes to come out. And he's like a really good player. He's really good against the run, which I don't think either of these two guys we're talking about get enough credit for. But it's like we've also seen him totally take over games too. Like we know that that's in there for him. So I think it was pretty clear that these guys should be the next two. But I agree with going Jack ahead of JT because I think there's more pass rushing upside with Jack.
So JT was not in PFF's top 10 edge rushers if everybody was available. I wonder if he's going to get picked apart. Like we've compared him a lot to Cam Hayward, who wound up being a late first round pick and is going to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I wonder if like James Laurinaitis might be a comparison for JT, that you're just like a very good player for a very long time and like people get tired of it.
Yeah.
Because, and it's like, well, James Laurinaitis wasn't Andy Katzenmoyer, right? And maybe he wasn't AJ Hawk. And so then it's like, okay, well, are you that good? And he falls to the second round. It's like, no, yeah, he's really good. He's 3-time All-American. It's like JT is like, well, you're not Chase Young and you're not, maybe not even Jack Sawyer when it comes to getting after the passer. And it's like, so then what are you? It's like, I don't know, like a tremendously great football player who's contributed for 4 years and was a 5-star recruit and has absolutely lived up to the billing and has never done anything wrong and has just been like a down after down, incredibly productive player for 4 years. And people are like, 3rd round. So like, I'm very curious to see how this evolves because people love edge guys who get sacks and that's just not the number one thing of his game.
It's not quite what he is. And we'll see, like, I think there's still something more to unlock there, right? Like I think I would bet on both Jack and JT having career highs in sacks this year.
Okay.
But I would say, like, if one of them is going to get double digits, it'll be Jack.
All right. I'm going to reach for my guy here.
All right.
Do you know who I'm reaching for?
Are you reaching for, well, there's any number of guys. Davis and Igbinosin?
That is correct.
Yeah.
I'm going to take Davis and Igbinosin 8th. He was 15th for the Texters. He's 6'2". He's got long arms. He's physical. And if he takes a step in man coverage, like, I think he could trait himself into the stratosphere at the combine in a year and have like some awesome tape. And I think he is a very good player. He's a little, it's one of the, like, he's just got to back off a little bit, but this, like, this is one of these, like, Damon Arnette was a handsy physical corner who went in the first round. And Davis and Igbinosin to me is 4 steps past Damon Arnette of like what this guy could wind up being. So when you think about the traits, I just think this is why I said, like, I think it's possible Igbinosin has like a very good year. Most people still see Denzel Burke as the best corner on this team. And then they get to the combine and he has the longest wingspan of any corner in the draft or whatever. And it's like, we get to the draft and Igbinosin goes 12 and Burke goes 16. And it's like, oh, wow, I thought he was the second best corner on that team. And it's like, yeah, but man, that guy has the perfect corner body. So I'll take Igbinosin 8th.
I like it. I had it. Where do I have him on my list? I had him 9th on my list. So I'm there with you. Like, I think he's, I think you're probably right that Denzel Burke will have like the better college season this year. But I think Igbinosin is going to take a major step forward. And I thought he was good last year, but I think he's going to take a step forward this year. And then once, come combine time, we're like, Denzel Burke's good, but that guy's 6'2". Right. And that guy runs like a 4.4 and like is a really good tackler. So like, I think those things will help him.
Yeah. All right. Igbinosin was 15th with the Texters, if I didn't say that. I took him 8th. Yeah. So I'm vibing on him. All right. 9th to you.
I think I'm going to keep it with the defensive backs and take Jordan Hancock.
Love Jordan Hancock. Mike Sanderstill from Michigan is going to go in the second round and make somebody very happy. And I've already had the conversation with Jordan Hancock of what Mike Sanderstill did last year is the heartbeat of that Michigan defense in the slot. And Hancock noted it as well. And I think that's on the table.
Yep. And when I think of Jordan Hancock, I think of Brian Branch from Alabama, who I believe wholeheartedly should have been a first round pick.
Yeah.
He ended up being the 45th pick in the draft in the second round. Like, good for the Lions for getting him there. Like, I thought that he should have gone in the first round. And again, it's like, it's versatility in the back end of the defense. I think Jordan Hancock, when he gets to the NFL, will be viewed as somebody who could play any position in your secondary. And maybe, you know, the ceiling at corner is not as high as the guys we've picked already. And the ceiling at safety is not as high as Caleb Downs, but it's all good. And I think the fact that it's all good and he's like a tough player. And I think like a no nonsense kind of guy, like, and he's talented too. Like, we're talking about the guy who was like a 70th overall player in his recruiting class, right? So it's not just like he's a try hard guy, he's really talented.
Yeah.
I think he's got a huge, I'm actually surprised he came back, only because the position that he plays feels like it's as important as it's ever been in the NFL, and his versatility would be so coveted that like I was pretty certain he was leaving even after being a one-year starter. Like, I'm rather surprised he's back.
He definitely could be. I mean, they could have 3 corners go in the first round. If all 3,
absolutely, I think so. Yeah,
like that's what we're talking about here. Yeah. So the Texters had him 11th. You took him 9th. It's a good pick. I'll take Emeka Buka, who maybe should have gone higher. He's 4th for the Texters. Did we just forget how good he was? This is the guy was the number one receiver recruit in his class. He had a 1,000-yard season as a sophomore. He got hurt last year. And it's like, well, he's no Jeremiah Smith, but it's like, yeah, but he might be like the 17th pick in the draft next year. So we really like, right, that he's physical. Mm-hmm. You could run the ball with him in a world. I don't know if the Deebo Samuel stuff has cooled down a little bit with the Niners, but like, he's not that, but he'll block and you can hand him the ball if you want to. And if you get like a creative offense, you can really use this guy. And by the way, he might have like 1,400 receiving yards this year.
Yeah, I he just didn't play a lot like last year, right? Like he was hurt. And just very clearly wasn't himself. And if some people are, and I'll probably put myself in this camp, are just like, you want to be sure that like he can get back to himself, right? So that's kind of where I am, which is why I had him 10th on my list. But it's also very possible, if not likely, that like by the fourth week of the season, we're like, oh yeah, 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 this guy might be the best receiver in college football.
Yeah. I just don't know. It does feel like, and this was a discussion we had a lot on Buckeye Talk, and I don't think I agree with it. Like Jaxon Smith-Njigba was like the next evolution, like beyond Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, and like those guys always mm-hmm. said he's going to be the best one. And in the end, like I don't think I ever thought that. I kind of thought that like Garrett Wilson was the best, like of that little group of guys. But in a world. In the modern era, if we would put maybe like Jeremiah Smith and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Garrett Wilson, like in the top tier of like have it all, but also just like next level athletes in addition to like all the things that you learn as an Ohio State receiver, then the next, like the next tier, and like the tier is between like, are you going to be picked in the top 10 or are you going to be picked in the teens? Like it's nothing. Right. Is like right is maybe Chris Olave, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Emeka Ebuka. Like is that
I'd agree with that.
Fair shorthand?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. So I took Ebuka 10th. You had him 10th. The Texters had him 11th. So like we're no. The Texters had him 4th. Can't read my handwriting. The Texters had him 4th. So you and I both in a different spot than the Texters are, but we just got excited about some young guys. All right, 11th pick to you.
This like it started to get pretty tricky for me in this spot. I'll take Tyleek Williams, who I don't know where he'll get drafted. Like, I think he's definitely a day two pick because I think he's gonna get to Indianapolis and be like, whoa, that guy just ran a 4.42 40 at not quite that fast, but like an incredibly good 40 time for a guy who's gonna weigh like 325 pounds probably when he goes to the combine. Like, I think Ohio State fans know that Tyleek is like a freaky kind of athlete, just like big fellas aren't supposed to be as twitchy as Tyleek is, and he's pretty freaking twitchy. So like all that's going to come out when he's going through this draft process, and he's not like the behemoth 6'5", 350 pound defensive tackle that I think finds himself going in the first round, but I think he's probably like a early third round pick at worst. And maybe there are guys I should be picking before him that are going to be first round picks. I think there are a couple we haven't touched on yet that could be first round picks. But I just really like Tyleek. Like I thought he took a major step forward last year, and the only reason that maybe it didn't carry through the entire season is because he played so much. So I'm hoping that he gets to have a little bit more of a manageable workload this fall and can kind of show from beginning to the end of the season that he's one of the better defensive tackles in the sport.
You took him 11th. The Texans had him 13th. Who do you think in the end will wind up being a better NFL prospect? Mike Hall, who's in this draft, or Tyleek Williams?
Tyleek Williams.
Okay. Because like Mike Hall's like a second or third round projection for most people. So like that's what we're so if that's what then I think you're talking about that's a world question. Where like Tyleek like sneaks into the top 50 potentially, which is like top half of the second round. So that'd be pretty good. I didn't know what to do with him. I'm glad you took him. I think it's a good pick. It's in the right range. But I'm gonna now go take a guy that it's what you're talking about, guys who could be first round picks, and I'll take Carnell Tate. Mm-hmm. And like continuing this lineage of like, okay, well, like what, like why wouldn't he be? So he's like the best guy in his class of the receiver group at Ohio State. He flashed as a freshman. He's going to start as a sophomore. This year, he worked his butt off last year. Like people, the coaches around him seemed to love his progression. They even like talked him up in a way that made us think he was going to play. And then he kind of didn't, but it's not like he's behind or anything. But I just think like, oh, yeah. Of what he's going to do over the next 2 years, it's like, well, yeah, Carnell Tate's going to be like the 21st pick in the draft. What are you talking about? Of course he is. So I'll take him here. The Texters had him 7th. I'm taking him 12th.
Yeah, no, it's a good pick. And probably the Texters are probably, when we look back at this 2 years from now, which I'm sure we'll do, I think the Texters are probably proven right with having him that high. It's a case of like everyone is so enamored with Jeremiah that you sort of like take for granted just how special Carnell might be. And like Emeka Ebuka being back too, I think takes some shine off of that. But everything. We have no reason to believe that, like, Carnell Tate is not doing everything he did last year, if not more than that, to get on the field as a true freshman. Like, he's going to be a really good, important player and productive player for Ohio State. And when you do that at the receiver position, you tend to go in the first round. So,
yeah. Pick 13 to you.
Another guy that I think might have first round upside, Jermaine Matthews.
Yeah, that's a good, like, he was coming off the board if you didn't take him. Yeah. You're taking him 13th. The Texans had him 10th.
Yeah, this is reinforced by, and I hesitate to make too much out of the spring game, but I never entertained the idea that Jermaine Matthews might be able to play nickel. I thought he'd just be an outside guy for his whole career and be very good at that, and that'd certainly be enough for Ohio State. But I thought he looked pretty comfortable playing nickel in the spring game too. So I don't know long term where he's going to end up playing more in his career. But again, it's a guy who can play multiple spots in the back end of your defense, and he's got a tenacity that is hard, like, I think, difficult to come by at that position. And like a guy who's just going to, like, be a tone setter for Ohio State's defense for a couple of years, and then wherever he goes in the NFL, like, you just want a guy who plays as confidently as Jermaine and backs it up. And I think he's going to be a star at the position.
A year from now, next spring, when Jordan Hancock, Davis, and Igbignosen and Denzel Burke are all in the NFL draft, and everyone's asking, like, who's going to be the leader in the cornerback room? And Jermaine Matthews just be like, I got it. I'm good.
Yep.
What are you worried about? It's all good. We're good. Yep. We're good. We're good. And then, so he's a second year player this year, right? And so he'll be,
yes.
So this might be one of those where it's like a 1 year and done as a starter, because, like, he just happens to be right now the fourth corner in a room with three guys that we think could be first round picks. And then he'll start and be on the Marshawn Lattimore plan and be like, wow, that guy was good, and be gone.
Yeah.
But I think Tate and Matthews certainly, you know, haven't played much, but they're on the path of first rounders. All right. There's two more guys that I want to take. I have two picks left. So I'll take Quinshon Judkins first. And the interesting thing here, this is the running back transfer. When PFF did their running backs, they had Quinshon Judkins. If every running back in college football was available for this draft, they had him second behind Ollie Gordon of Oklahoma State. Nice. And they had Travion Henderson 10th. So I'm not sure that I could tell you convincingly right now why I think Quinshon Judkins is a better NFL prospect than Travion Henderson. But he's certainly right. He's a tackle breaker. He's physical. Travion's a little bit more of the run away from you guy, and Quinshon the run through you guy. But it caught my eye that PFF thought of him that way.
I am not entirely sure that Travion is like an every down back in the NFL, and I think that Quinshon Judkins is. Now, he's got a lot of wear and tear on him, right? He's carried the ball a lot the last 2 years, and will carry it a lot this fall for Ohio State. But I like vision, elusiveness, contact balance, I think, is maybe the biggest thing that Quinshon Judkins brings to the table. And then he's just like a powerful guy, like, and I think he'll add a little bit of like out of the backfield reception stuff to his game this year as well. And like, I think Travion's great. But I don't know that he brings quite all the same tools to the table that Quinshon Judkins does.
It's not a slight of Travion Henderson. It's like, you are who you are. And
yeah,
all anybody at Ohio State wants, and we've seen it a lot, is for Travion Henderson to be the best version of what he is. And what he is like a shot out of a cannon guy. But again, you know, what the NFL thinks of running backs, but I think you had a good evaluation there. So that's why I took Judkins ahead of Travion. I took him 14th. The Texans had Judkins 12th on their list. So we're kind of in agreement here. One more pick for each of us. Number 15 to you.
I just want to make the point that J.K. Dobbins was the 55th pick in the draft. So, like, if Trey is as good as J.K., like, there's still a hard barrier to break through.
Well, and I think, do you think, like, right now, I would say J.K. is better than Judkins and Henderson, the J.K. Dobbins that went to the pros, who had a 2,000-yard season at Ohio State.
Yeah, yeah.
I also thought the Chiefs should have taken J.K. Dobbins instead of Clyde Edwards-Helaire at pick 30, and that J.K. should have gone in the first round. And I, at the time, thought that J.K. Dobbins was better than Jonathan Taylor, and that he should have gone ahead of him. And then J.K. has just had this terrible luck in the NFL. Really been able to see what he might be, because every time he's going to be a lead back, he gets hurt.
Yeah.
So, it's just hard to evaluate. But like, J.K. Dobbins was unbelievable And he was a 55th pick. He was unbelievable here. So anyway.
I'm going to take CJ Hicks.
Okay. You're going off my board. I did not offer this. I'll list the other people I did offer instead of CJ Hicks, and you can criticize me. Why are you going CJ here?
I think this will be the kind of thing where what he is as a pro will frustrate Ohio State fans.
Oh, because one of those,
Because he's not going to be used maybe in the way that he should be. And I think like
pros will use him as a linebacker.
I think the pros, no, I think he's going to be on the ball and okay. I think he's going to be really good. Okay. And I hope that Ohio State does at least a little bit of that with him this year. We'll see. And I think he's made, based off the spring, like some definite strides as an off ball linebacker for sure. But I think the thing that he will do best is just like get after it up front and like not read and react, not play in the box, not go sideline to sideline. Like he has the skills to do all that stuff, I think. But I think the thing he'll do best is like get up on the line of scrimmage and then go terrorize your quarterback. And I think he'll probably flash that enough as a blitzer in Ohio State's defense, even if they choose not to play him up on the line, that he'll go like Byron Browning was a third round pick, right? It's like a guy who didn't do a whole lot of anything at Ohio State, frankly, but was a third round pick because he's a freak. I think CJ stands to like go higher than that. One, because I think he'll be a more productive college player, I think, than Byron Browning was. But two, I think maybe like his physical abilities might supersede Byron Browning's as well. So I think CJ is probably a second round pick in my mind right now. But if everything clicks for him this year, maybe he has the ability to be a first round pick.
So that all sounds good. Do you think, would you predict right now that he will be in the next draft or he'll be at Ohio State for two more years before he goes?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I would probably predict that he sticks around for a fourth year and goes two drafts from now. Yeah.
Okay. I will say, because they're going to lose so many of these guys, but like it would be interesting, like if both CJ Hicks and Sonny Styles stuck around, like with Caleb Downs, who has to stick around, and then like you throw Jermaine Matthews in there, and then it's like basically a group of whole new guys up front, like they would be like their defense. If that happens, the 2025 defense is CJ Hicks, Sonny Styles, and Caleb Downs go crazy. And like everybody else, just like fill in the gaps to make sure they're allowed to go crazy, right? Like that'd be fun.
Right. Yeah.
All right. I'll wrap it up, and then we'll talk about who I put on the list ahead. I'm going to take Donovan Jackson, who I think could be a day two pick, could be a second or third rounder. When you think about some other interior offensive linemen for Ohio State, like a guy like Josh Myers, who was a center, but like was a second round pick. Wyatt Davis, I guess, was like a fourth round pick. But Pat Elflein, I think, was a fourth round pick. Like if you're like a really good guard. You know, I think he could work himself into round two or three. In that PFF list, he was ninth among interior offensive linemen, that's centers and guards. And he's going to end up having a ton of film. And if he has more comfort with his left tackle and his center, and he has a more veteran center next to him, I think his film will be even better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of our threshold. Do you think a guy can be picked in the first three rounds? And I think Donovan Jackson can.
I think he can too. I think almost think his floor is like third round. Only because he's a really good athlete. Even if like he's, in my opinion, like left a little something to be desired as a former five-star prospect at times. He's very athletic for his position. So that raises his floor considerably. But I also think there's and I don't think he's gonna be a first rounder because of the position mostly, but I think there's a chance for him to like take a step this year because of what you said, because of another season playing next to Josh Simmons and like having a guy who knows how to play center next to him on the other side, will allow him to take a step forward. Like maybe he's a second round pick. So I can see that for sure. I had on my list. He would have been the guy I picked here if I had the last pick.
All right. So here are the guys that I did list for the texters that we did not pick in our top 16, but I listed ahead of CJ Hicks, Travion Henderson, who we did not pick. Are you surprised that we didn't pick Travion?
I'm not surprised that we didn't pick Travion, but I also think if we made another pick, he'd be the guy.
Just because sometimes excellent college running backs go like late in the third round.
He's been hurt every year.
Yeah. All right. He was 14th for the texters. 16th for the Texans was Lathan Ransom at safety. 17th for the Texans was Jelani Thurman at tight end, like if he turns into Darnell Washington.
Yeah.
18th for the Texans was Aaron Noland as a freshman quarterback. And 20th for the Texans was presumed Ohio State starting quarterback Will Howard. So I gave them 20 names, and the guy they think is going to be the starting quarterback was last, and we didn't pick him. So what do you, what, like,
I don't think
does that tell us anything, or does it, like, of course, I don't know. Like, Will Howard's not Jeremiah Smith, newsflash.
I think if you're honest about what Will Howard has been and what he's likely to become, then no, I'm not surprised we didn't pick him. If the threshold is like top three rounds, I don't think that's who Will Howard is.
Yeah.
So if you prove me wrong, I'm happy to be proven wrong, but I just don't think he's that kind of quarterback.
So besides Hicks, the other guy I considered putting on with Edric Houston as a freshman on the defensive line, it was a five-star recruit. Is there, like, I briefly considered like Ian Moore on the offensive line. We're not a lot of one offensive lineman on our list.
So, Josh Simmons, you didn't consider?
I don't know. Not really.
Yeah.
Did you consider Josh Simmons in the top 16?
Not in the top 16, but maybe in the top 20 if we stretch it out a little bit longer. Okay. But yeah, Ian Moore is just like a, you know, recruiting pedigree pick, I guess.
Yeah.
Arvell Reese, I think, is one.
Yeah.
Just like big, fast, strong guy. Like the next mold of CJ Hicks, Sonny Styles kind of deal.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did I have anybody else? Aaron Scott, again, like a freshman, just kind of throwing a dart at the guy with a good recruiting pedigree. And those were every other name I had down we talked about already.
Okay. So let me run through it real quick. And if you hear a mistake, shout it on your treadmill or in your car. And Bill, you shout it out too. Like a mistake, like not that I listed it wrong, but that we picked it wrong when it happened. Okay. Number one, Jeremiah Smith. Number two, Julian Sayin. Number three, Caleb Downs. Number four, Sonny Styles. Number five, Denzel Burke. Number six, Jack Sawyer. Number seven, JT Tuimoloau. Number eight, Davison Igbignosen. Number nine, who's number nine? Oh, Jordan Hancock. I can't read my handwriting. Number nine, Jordan Hancock. Number 10, Emeka Ibuka. Number 11, Tyleek Williams. Number 12, Carnell Tate. Number 13, Jermaine Matthews. Number 14, Quinshon Judkins. Number 15, CJ Hicks. And number 16, Donovan Jackson. Sound pretty good to you, or do you have any regrets that one of us should have?
Emeka, I think, should probably be higher.
Okay.
Than 10th. These are the Texans had him at 7th, right?
The Texans had him 4th.
Or 4th. Yeah. Higher than 10th, I think. Yeah. Like, maybe probably, as much as I like Jordan Hancock, the guy I compared him to won the second round, right? Brian Branch. So, I think Emeka should probably be, like, between 5 and 8 instead of being 10.
Yeah. Okay, I'll buy that. Otherwise, it's a good little look. There's a lot of good young players on this team, but there's also like a bunch of dudes who are going to be in the draft next year and get picked pretty high. So when we come back, we will deal with the guys who are actually going to be in the 2024 NFL draft, and we will make our predictions where Mike Hall, Tommy Eichenberg, and all these guys are going to go on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We'll do that next on Kings of Columbus. Welcome back to Kings of Columbus. We're going to predict where we think actual real-life Ohio State Buckeyes will be selected in the 2024 NFL Draft. And I will say there is something that could happen on Thursday night that will make Ohio State fans go crazy, and you're nodding.
It's going to happen.
You think it's going to happen. Yeah. We're going to deal with Marvin Harrison Jr. first. So why don't you tell us, Bill Landis, what you think is going to happen?
I think quarterbacks are going with the first four picks, and then the Chargers are going to stay at 5, and Jim Harbaugh is going to draft Marvin Harrison Jr.
How will that be received?
So I don't know.
Here's the thing that is hard to understand, right? Which is, in college, you hate people, and then there's money. And when there's money, hate dies. Money smothers hate. Because people were mad that Jim Harbaugh took the Chargers job, that like Joey Bosa was on the roster. That Joey Bosa should quit. It's like he's not gonna quit. And guess what J.K. Dobbins did? He signed with the Chargers after Jim Harbaugh was there. So like he knows. So this idea, here's the thing, right? Most people expect, and I'm going to predict it, but I didn't predict it very convincingly. I'll say number four to Arizona for Marvin Harrison Jr. So Arizona has a need, but they might sell the pick if they get offered a bunch of stuff, because you're talking about four quarterbacks, right?
Yeah.
Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and J.J. McCarthy. It really could come down to a point where the fourth pick is either going to be Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy or Ohio State receiver Marvin Harrison Jr., and somebody like the Vikings trades up for the fourth spot and the Cardinals can't say no.
Right. Yeah. And I think I did see a mock draft that had the Cardinals trading out of four to Minnesota to let Minnesota take McCarthy, but then the Cardinals trading back up to five to get Marvin.
So I checked the PFF's 7-round mock draft, and Dane Brugler, our good friend of, I'm not going to say a good friend. We both like Dane. We know Dane. He's from Ohio.
Yeah.
That was Dane's scenario. PFF has Marv going fourth. Dane has him going fifth under that scenario, that the Cardinals trade out of four, but then trade back to five. Because people also think that maybe the Chargers would be willing to trade that pick at five. But the thing for the Chargers is they lost Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, two of their two best receivers. They like have no receivers.
Yeah.
So taking a receiver is not crazy, but also they might want to stockpile picks and they could take a receiver in the teens or something. But like, so you your just scenario, put
Marv and Justin Herbert together, man. Like, let's get
it's not off the board.
What a right? What a like
I, yeah. Yeah. You think Ohio State fans would be mad though?
I mean, I don't think they love it. I think like I'm not telling Ohio State fans they need to like Jim Harbaugh, but I also think you want to see Ohio State guys like go to good situations where they can be mm-hmm. successful, right? And a lot of times Ohio State players who are going in the top 10 get drafted into terrible situations. Marvin Harrison, like going five to the Chargers, like the Chargers could be a playoff team next year. You know what I mean? Like it's like they're not a basement team. They just happen to have a bad season and are picking in a basement spot. But the upward mobility of that franchise is, I think, rather easy to wrap your head around, especially if they add Marvin Harrison Jr. to catch passes from Justin freaking Herbert. So like, yeah, they should do it.
I also asked our texters survey questions about this. 51% of the texters said pick number four for Marv. 25% said pick number three, which would be if something happens with New England. 22% said pick number five, and only 1% said lower than that. So most of the people, more than half the people think he's going number four.
Yeah, I guess there's some talk. I saw before we started recording this on Monday that the Patriots could be interested in trading their third pick. So I don't know if that's someone moving up for a quarterback or maybe someone moving up for Marv, but
yeah,
I guess it's possible.
It'd be a heck of a thing for someone to fall in love with. I think we can have a little conversation here. I feel like there's been like a little bit of a Marv backlash, because you'll hear people, you can find people, Malik Nabers from LSU is a speedster, has some Tyreek Hill comparisons. You can find people who, you know, who will say, oh, there's some NFL teams that have Malik Nabers number one on their draft board for receivers. And then Roma Dunze from Washington, who we love, is so physical. He is just an absolute contested catch force. And it's just that like Marv does everything well. And then Marv also like kind of has disappeared from view because he just stood on his tape and like he didn't do anything at the combine. He didn't do anything at pro day. And so
he's just been hanging out in Columbus, man.
Yeah.
Every time we go in there, Marv's like up in the cafeteria eating lunch. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing
here?
He's just
he's not showing people how fast he actually is, or he's not showing people how many bench reps he could actually do and that he's physical. And he's just like reminding, hoping that people remember that, like, remember when he was like super good at football? So it's not like I think he's going to fall or anything, but I feel like, and maybe it's not a backlash. Maybe it's just like this is people like the draft process. And when you basically choose to sit out the process, sometimes they'll like gravitate towards guys who were giving them something in the process.
I feel like Marv and his dad might be diabolical enough to like anticipate this to get Marv to a better team.
Mm.
Right? Like, you think that's crazy? Because like I disagree with any other ranking that doesn't have Marvin Harrison Jr. as the number one wide receiver in this draft. But if you open a door for people to think that, and then you don't have to go play for the Washington Commanders because of that, like that's not the worst thing in the world, right? You're sacrificing a little bit of money, I suppose, on your rookie contract. But I think that almost be worth it to go to a team that is like competent and might be able to win early in your career.
Like it'll be an absolute draft tsunami if a receiver goes ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. And if it does, we'll all those conversations will start mm-hmm. about did they make a mistake by sitting out the draft process, or were they diabolical about it, or why does the league care so much about this stuff when guys have games and games and games of film? Isn't the film the thing that matters? And so, like, again, it's a little bit of a straw man, like, oh, it's going to be crazy, because it's not going to happen. Like, it'll be stunning if it does. But if it does, it's going to spark a debate about how we go about this thing, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's do Mike Hall next. Also a junior, Mike Hall Jr. PFF has him going number 69 overall in the third round. Dane Brugler at The Athletic has him going number 43 overall in the second round. On the mock draft database big board of players, he is the number 5 defensive tackle. Our survey people have 50% of them predicted he would go in the third round, 36% predicted second round, 10% fourth round. So third round, half the people, but more second than fourth. Where do you have him going?
I have him in the second round. I have him second round, 54 overall to your hometown Cleveland Browns.
Oh, man. People, there's nothing people love. And like the Browns have started to do it. Like after not having any Buckeyes for a long time, it was like my number one thing I covered in the offseason was why aren't there any Ohio State players in Cleveland? They clearly have, I mean, whatever it is, happenstance, but DeJuan Jones and Luke Whipler and Ronnie Hickman and Denzel Ward. And like there's real Ohio State vibe with the Browns now. And that certainly is one of them. I tried to find a list. There are some websites that have this. I think this is right. Among the pre-draft visits, so this is NFL teams get 30 guys they can bring in for visits to their facilities. Mike Hall, I believe, has visited Kansas City, Detroit, Houston, Cleveland, Green Bay, and San Francisco, maybe among a few others. So it's one of these things. Sometimes like the draft visit, like that you bring in guys you don't want to take to throw people off. It's like, don't you want to gather the information? But he has visited Cleveland. I'm going to say third round, and I'm going to say number 73 to Detroit, which is also a place where he has visited. And it feels like you'll find Lions writers saying they want to use a lot of their draft on defensive guys. Mm-hmm. 54 to 73. Is he like the kind of pass rushing defensive tackle that NFL teams are salivating for, or is he a little bit of how much of a good run stopper is he when it comes to the down and dirty stuff? Will maybe slide.
Yeah, I think that's on the table, right? Like, are you going to put him out there on every down, or is he more of like a specialist kind of thing? Which, like, even if he is a specialist, like, I still think you might take that guy in the second or third round just because pass rush is so valuable still in the NFL, but it's possible that maybe, and I don't think Mike Hall was like a bad run defender at Ohio State, but it's certainly not the first thing you think of. So maybe that causes him to slide. Maybe that makes third round a little more realistic. I'd be surprised if he fell into the fourth round.
Okay.
I'd be surprised if Saturday morning we're waiting for Mike Hall to get picked.
Second round does feel a little high to me. Like, yeah. He doesn't have a huge snap count at Ohio State. And with all the dirty, down and dirty work that you're asked to do at defensive tackle, I just, like, who do you think is a better NFL draft prospect, Davon Hamilton or Mike Hall, when Davon Hamilton came out of Ohio State?
I would probably say Mike Hall, just because, like, the pass rushing upside there is substantially better, I think.
Okay. But Davon Hamilton, I think, was a third rounder. He's been like a very good pro, but maybe is more of like a down to down guy. I don't know. I'm not.
He was
also
2 years older than Mike Hall coming.
Yeah. I'm not criticizing Mike Hall. I just wonder how he'll be viewed. So I actually would be a little surprised if he goes in the second round. But so we have a little disagreement there. Second round for you, third round for me. Mm-hmm. Next up is Cade Stover. I think when the draft process started, I would have predicted that Cade Stover would be the second Buckeye off the board. And like everybody has Mike Hall being picked ahead of Cade Stover at this point. He's the fifth tight end on the mock draft database big board, like the consensus of that. Barely behind Theo Johnson of Penn State, who had some really good testing numbers. But if you think about who the best tight ends were in the Big Ten last year, all Big Ten, you know, I don't know that anybody would have said that Theo Johnson's a better tight end than Cade Stover, but now we're in the draft process.
Right.
PFF has Cade Stover going at number 115 overall in the fourth round to the Bengals. Dane Brugler at The Athletic has him going 121 overall in the fourth round to Denver. Where do you have Cade Stover going?
I have him in the fourth round, number 101 overall, which I believe is the first pick of the fourth round, to the Carolina Panthers.
Okay. So we certainly are not pretending to be draft experts here, but I do try to use other Ohio State players who have come through at the same positions and say, okay, well, where did those guys go? Jeremy Ruckert, a tight end, was exactly this pick. Is that right? He was a third rounder, though.
Maybe I thought Ruckert was a third rounder, yeah.
But he was also pick 101, I think. I think there were more compensatory picks that year. Okay. Ruckert was a third rounder, 101. Luke Farrell was a fifth rounder, 145. Nick Vinette was a third rounder, pick 94. And Jeff Heirman was a third rounder, pick 92. I think Cade Stover might be a better NFL draft prospect than any of those four guys.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. That I do wonder about the injury stuff and how that might hurt him, especially because like it was his back for part of the time that was bothering him too.
And you have questions about his blocking or no?
Yeah. I don't. I mean, I know he took exception with that line of questioning. I just don't think he was a very reliable blocker at Ohio State, and maybe the injuries had something to do with that. And if he's past them, or maybe like not playing as many snaps or whatever in the NFL, he's able to be a more consistent blocker in that way. But I didn't think he was a great blocker. I thought he was the best receiving tight end that I've seen at Ohio State in my time covering them. Just like spatial awareness, strong at the catch point, gives you more after the catch than you probably expect based on his physique. But like he can move really well for a guy as big as he is. But just not a tremendous blocker. So but I also, I don't know. I don't really know how much that matters anymore or either, right? So
well, and he's so physical. He's like a linebacker playing tight end. Like I think he wants to be or could be taught to be a great blocker in the right circumstance. Like if he's not a great blocker, it's not because he's afraid to be physical.
No, I think it might be because he's like so amped up to hit you that like maybe he doesn't target it quite the right way.
Yeah. But I think he could get better at that. Pretty split the tech subscribers. 44% said third round. 33% said fourth round, and then 11% said fifth round. So more third than fourth. I'm going to take him in the third round. I'm going to say third round, pick 76 to Denver, which is pretty high.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is
high. But that is like substantially higher than these other guys went. You have the other guys went in the 90s or the 100s. So I just, you know, I don't want to just be living on the fumes of Farmer Gronk and where we were kind of like a year ago before he decided to come back for another year. But I think he's a pretty good package of skills. And for him to be the fifth tight end off the board, I don't know. I also just think he might end up being like the third tight end off the board. And then because like somebody really likes his package of skills, the guy, obviously Brock Bowers is going to be the first tight end. And then according to Mock Draft Database, Jatavion Sanders, Ben Sinnott from Kansas State, and Theo Johnson are the other tight ends ahead of Cade Stover. But it's like, why do they have to go ahead of Cade Stover? I don't know. I think like he could be the third tight end taken, right?
Yeah, it feels like it's Brock Bowers and then like a bunch of testing guys, right? It's like bouncy athletes. Ben Sinnott's like a fullback. Which I'm actually surprised that some people have him ahead of Cade Stover. Not that I think he's a good player. Like I've saw enough of him from watching Will Howard. Like I think he's a pretty nice tight end, but I'd rather have Cade Stover. I think I'd rather have Cade Stover than all the other tight ends that aren't named Brock Bowers. But I get it if you're looking for more of like almost a pure receiver kind of skill set, then maybe that's not quite what Cade Stover is, but I guess it just depends on your preferred cup of tea there. I don't know.
If it doesn't work out at tight end, you can move him to linebacker. All right, so you have him at 101. I have him at 76.
Yeah.
Let's go to Tommy Eichenberg. Tommy Eichenberg, Dane Brugler of The Athletic, pick 138 in the fifth round to Arizona. PFF pick 119 in the fourth round to New England. I used a mathematical formula to figure out where I think Tommy Eichenberg is going to get picked. And my formula was there was a time when I thought he was Tough Borland. And then when he had his breakout year in year one of Jim Knowles, it was like, is he James Laurinaitis? So I took where James Laurinaitis was drafted, which was the 35th pick in 2009. And I took where Tuff Borland was drafted, which was nowhere. He was undrafted. And there were 259 picks that year. And so I added 35 plus 259. And then I divided that by two. And I got 147, which would be in the fifth round to Denver. That's just who has the 147th pick. I have no idea if he's a good fit for Denver. But since he at times, I think, reminded some people, probably unfairly, of Tuff Borland, it would be nice to have him play in the NFL with Baron Browning. So I am saying 147, fifth round for Tommy Eichenberg.
I like that. I also used a mathematical equation to pick my spot for Tommy Eichenberg. And the math there was that the Saints have drafted five Ohio State players since 2016. And they're going to draft Tommy Eichenberg in the fifth round at 150 overall. So we're kind of in the same spot there. But reunite Tommy Eichenberg and Pete Werner down there on the bayou.
Oh, they'd be lovely. They could get muffalettas together.
There you go.
Fifth round was the most popular among our tech subscribers, although it was pretty evenly divided. 35% said fifth round. 27% said sixth round, 20% said fourth round, then some other ones. So like fifth round sounds about right. Overall, I would just be a little surprised if it goes higher than that. Overall, 30% of the texters said second, third, or fourth. 70% said fifth, sixth, seventh, or undrafted. So 70 to 30, it'll be fifth round or later. Just got like in a weird spot of like, I think like better athlete than you think, but also still not as good of an athlete as a bunch of other linebackers out there. And now you're in the range of like productive football player who maybe even like wasn't quite as productive in his last year. He was in his second last year. So now you're just like in football player land, and can he play special teams and do some other things? And I think he's more that than like, we are counting on this guy to be a starting linebacker in the league, right?
Yeah, I think he's probably more of like a reserve linebacker and special teamer, but that still gets you drafted, I think.
Absolutely. And
he was he was much better 2 years ago as like a guy that Jim Knowles just uses a battering ram as a blitzer on every snap, and less effective, I think, like playing more in the box, like playing more read and react, and also was hurt last year too. And then the one thing that didn't really come to fruition was Jim Knowles, I think, said, like last May before the season, he said, like, I want to get Tommy in more positions to like show his coverage ability. And I don't really know that it ever happened. So like that obviously would add value for any off ball linebacker, but I don't know if Tommy is viewed as having that, but he is more athletic than you'd assume, I think. So I definitely like, I would be shocked if he doesn't get drafted. Like, I think he's definitely going to get drafted, but probably more on a day three pick. Yeah.
All right. Now we're getting into some guys where I don't think they're guaranteed to get picked. We'll go to Josh Proctor. Mm-hmm. Safety. He was projected at pick 229 in the seventh round by PFF and pick 199 in the sixth round by Dane Brugler at The Athletic, who had him going to the Saints, because everybody knows, as you said, Saints love the Buckeyes. I feel like I've watched Ohio State safeties go lower in the draft than everybody expects. Jordan Fuller was a sixth round pick and turned out to be like an excellent NFL player. And then Ronnie Hickman didn't get drafted last year and then wound up playing some meaningful football for the Cleveland Browns. Is Josh Proctor a better draft prospect than Ronnie Hickman was?
I think so. Yeah.
Athletically?
I think he's significantly more athletic, and his season last year was better than, I think, Ronnie Hickman's best season.
Better than Ronnie Hickman's best season. Okay.
Yeah. Like, I know Ronnie like racked up a bunch of tackles that year that Ohio State's defense was like really bad. But his draft year, I don't think Ronnie was particularly impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think Ronnie's last year was his best year, but okay. I have undrafted. I imagine possible. You don't.
What I don't, do but have? Like I'm late. I'm six round, 201 overall to the Lions. I was just trying to think of like, you had Mike Hall to the Lions, which I like who's going to bite a kneecap for Dan Campbell. And I think Josh Proctor will bite a kneecap if you ask him to.
Oh no, I think he would. You'd bite a kneecap, wouldn't you?
I would. Yeah. Yeah. I like Dan Campbell. I do it for him. Yeah.
Too tough. I don't want to bite a kneecap. Seventh round one for the Texters, 35%, 23% sixth round undrafted. Also 23%. Mm-hmm. So, but like 77% think he'll get drafted. So 23% don't. So I'm in the minority there. And I don't have a strong conviction on it. It's just, I do. It's the nature of the beast. I've just been through a lot of drafts waiting for guys who I thought were excellent Ohio State players who I projected to go in the fourth round, not get drafted.
I'm yeah.
Like, what the heck? And it's like, oh, there's a lot of football players. So that's how it works. Steel Chambers, and you would like to share some information about Steel Chambers before we do our draft predictions.
Yeah. So the aforementioned Dame Brugler does his the Beast draft guide every year, just like unearths things about players that you didn't know and probably frankly didn't need to know. There's just a lot of stuff in there about like every guy in the draft because Dane is a maniac and he wants to be thorough. But anyway, in his Steel Chambers brief, it was revealed to me, I had no idea, that Steel's real name is Donovan. His name is Donovan Chambers, which is like a whole different guy. It's the Steel Chambers and Donovan Chambers
yeah.
aren't the same person.
And you shared this information with Austin, whose head exploded.
Yeah. My head exploded when I first saw it. I thought it was a typo. I thought like, yeah. Dane got his names mixed up. But I didn't bother to check, but I'm assuming that Dane did not get his names mixed up.
Is it not such a different world where your parents named you Steel to people just call you Steel?
Yeah. Yeah. It's. I thought Steel was like short for Steelton or something like that.
Yeah. It'd be like if your parents had named you Philly Billy. It's like they named him that? Like,
yeah. Yeah, of course.
It's like, no, his name's William. It's just a nickname. It's like, oh, okay. do you think Steel Chambers will get drafted?
I do not. I have him undrafted.
I have him undrafted as well. Dane Brugler has him undrafted. PFF has him pick 207, I think it is, in the sixth round, which is pretty good. The texter is 57% undrafted. 22% seventh round, 18% sixth round. I just think it's hard. It doesn't mean he's not going to make a roster. It's just hard at linebacker if you don't have like a really like specific thing that you're awesome at. You know, like you're glue yourself to guys in coverage, or you're a monster blitzer, or you're a super fast guy or a super huge guy. And I feel like Steel Chambers was just like pretty good at a lot of stuff. Probably his coverage grades will help him. I think he could be a special teamer in the NFL, but I don't know that he has anything that makes somebody jump and say, we got to draft this guy.
No, I think he'll definitely make a roster. Like he'll be like a pretty high priority undrafted free agent for a lot of teams because he's so athletic. And will provide you like some versatility and coverage ability at a position on your defense. But I just don't know. Like if he were a little bigger, maybe he might get drafted, but he's also undersized for linebacker. So I just don't see it. Maybe he'll sneak into the seventh round or something like that. But again, you say it every year, like at that point, you'd almost rather be a free agent. So yeah. I think he will be undrafted, but quickly find a home when the draft ends.
Another guy reminds me, another guy like just waiting for him to be drafted who didn't get drafted was Tyvis Powell, who was just like, oh, that guy is like an incredibly productive, important football player for a highly winning program. And he didn't get picked. And then he was like a high priority and he picked to go to Seattle and be with those Legion of Boom guys. And like, you know, that's one of those, again, it's like Tyvis Powell didn't get picked, but like Steel Chambers and Josh Proctor are going to get picked. I have a hard time with some of this stuff sometimes. And it's not apples to apples because it's like, well, what are their 40 times and how do they jump and what were their agility drills and all that kind of stuff. It's not just, you know, who played more important snaps at Ohio State. But this is why, like, again, we're not like criticizing guys when we're predicting them to be undrafted. It's just, it's hard to get picked, man.
It is. All right.
Matthew Jones on the offensive line, undrafted 47% of the texters. That won, but that means that more than half the people think he will be drafted. Do you think he will be drafted?
I do not. I think he's undrafted. Yeah.
I think he's undrafted too. And again, I was trying to list some like, it still blows my, like Andrew Norwell didn't get drafted out of Ohio State and then became like a 100 millionaire in the NFL and made all pro teams and stuff. I can remember waiting for Mike Brewster to get drafted. I think people were predicting like Mike Brewster to be like a fourth round pick and then he didn't get drafted at all. So like, it's just hard and he's a little old and he's been hurt at times and he's a productive player and he'll be in somebody's camp and he might win a spot in a roster, but I don't think he'll get picked.
Yeah, age is a big factor there. I wonder if like he might be like a little like too mild mannered for NFL teams, like, and like Matthew Jones had some really good games at Ohio State, but also some pretty bad games at Ohio State. His last game at Ohio State was a pretty bad game in the Cotton Bowl when he tried to play center. So I don't know. Like, I think a rosterable player, but I don't know if he's a draftable player. I think you need to be a little more athletic and consistent than Matthew Jones was in his Ohio State career to be drafted.
All right, last one is Mayan Williams, who once upon a time, somebody at Ohio State said he's a draft pick. And I think if he had gone pro after 2022, he might have been, but I do not think he'll be drafted now. Do you think he will be?
I don't think he will be. Another guy with injury stuff, another guy with like measurables that don't work in his favor. Not a whole lot of versatility to him either. So I get like, oh, get a shot, but I don't think it'll be as a drafted player.
Listen, these guys they all make personal decisions. So it's not about like criticizing their decision, because it's like your life. What are you going to do? But like he may have been better off going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like strike while the iron is hot a little bit. And just wound up like in a tough spot, right? With injury stuff. And it was like kind of weird stuff at the beginning of the year. It's like, well, how's he fit into this? And so, again, really productive at times for Ohio State, but probably won't hear his name called. So again, just kind of remarkable of how sort of underwhelming this draft will be for Ohio State when you consider that there's like 10 guys sitting in Columbus who could be hearing their names called.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be a more of a low key draft than we're accustomed to. And like people might try to throw that in Ohio State's face when the draft is over and people start running out the list of programs that had the most players selected. And if that happens to you as an Ohio State fan and you feel angry about it, just wait till next year and you'll get them all back.
Yeah. Just tell them our draft picks are on our team.
Right.
Michigan's going to have like 15 guys picked also. So like that's going to be like another thing that Ohio State fans may not love to watch this weekend. All right. Draft Thursday, Friday, Saturday. When we come back, what you watching, what you eating, what you thinking next on Kings of Columbus. Time for what you watching, what you eating, what you thinking. Bill Landis, what you watching?
So I've been home by myself for the last few days. So I got to dig in on some Netflix. Nice. I watched all of Mindhunter, like the two seasons of Mindhunter.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty freaking good. I thought the first season was better than the second season.
Yes.
But the second season was still good. Just like really well done. I knew that like the guy that played the king in Hamilton was the one guy. Like, it's like, oh, yep, that's an interesting role for him. But I didn't know like a lot of the people in the show. Like, he was like he and his partner, whose name I don't know actually, is like kind of like a character actor, and I think like getting more roles now. Like, there were the two people I recognized, and like I didn't really recognize anybody else in the show. I'm like, man, everyone on the show is a really good actor, and maybe that's just the writing's really good. But like, it's heavy and intense, and at times kind of hard to sit through. But in the end, like, really well done. Like, one of the better shows I think I've watched, and I'm sad that there's not more of it.
No, I wish they would have made a third season. The case that the second season focuses on, I feel like you get lost in it a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like a real life case. But it's David Fincher, right? I mean, it's like David Fincher, like one of the great directors in modern cinema history, just like doing a TV show. And it was like, holy moly. So, oh, good call. Well done by you.
Yeah. You, I don't know why. Sorry,
you could have watched The Godfather, but at least watch Mindhunter.
I could have watched The Godfather. I don't know how I landed on Mindhunter. I think I just like fired up Netflix and was like, oh, I should watch something new. And then that was like recommended to me.
No, it's one of those like you Googled murder and it's like, oh,
yeah.
How did I stumble across that?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it, because the thing that I watched, I did not enjoy. So it's one of those things that's like, hey, let's do a movie review that's 14 months old. And that's not what we're really here to do. But I watched Napoleon and it was terrible. It was like, so everybody else is going like, oh, you're the king, sir. Who, the royal king? And then Joaquin Phoenix as Napoleon is like, I'm Napoleon. He didn't even try. He doesn't do a voice. He sounds bored. And then I was like Googling like Joaquin Phoenix, terrible in Napoleon. And I came across Brian Cox, the guy from Succession, was just like, I watched Napoleon and he was awful. And like 1,000 people wrote stories about it. Maybe like Brian Cox even more. It was like, he didn't even try. It was so weird. But it was all, it was like 42 minute Saturday Night Live skits with Bill Hader playing Napoleon strung together. And then two gigantic battle scenes where they just like made horses run into each other in the middle. And that was it. Because it was ridiculous. But it was the most disinterested performance I've seen since Zayn Malik was preparing to quit One Direction. And I sniffed it out of the concert. I was like, that guy's going to quit. And then he quit. I thought Joaquin Phoenix was going to quit in the middle of the movie. Oh, the Royal Emperor Napoleon! Yes, it's me, Napoleon. So
I haven't seen it because I thought from the trailer that was obvious that Joaquin Phoenix was not particularly interested, which is like really frustrating because that feels like among the more meatier roles you could possibly ever want to play. And you're just like, I guess I'll do it. Yeah, I'll cash the check.
He was like, in my last movie, I got to be a murderous Batman clown. Napoleon's boring. It's like, dude, it's Napoleon. So I don't know. And then there was just like stuff in the movie. Like, I don't want to give it away, but like there's a part in the movie where it's like Napoleon's invading Egypt and he shoots a cannonball at the pyramids and like blows a hole in the top of the pyramids. And then I looked it up and they're like, yeah, that never happened. And Ridley Scott was like, well, I mean, he didn't really actually shoot the pyramids, but I just wanted a shorthand for his destruction of Egypt. Uh-oh. And I was like, I was so mad he shot the pyramids. And it's like, he didn't. It's like, okay. One guy's bored and the other guy's lying. Yay! Thanks, Apple. Okay. It was terrible. What are you eating?
I guess people know this, right? Like when you have a child or children, like you just don't have time to do anything for yourself anymore, including like cook for yourself. So I'm trying to I am still like very much a person who enjoys cooking breakfast for myself in the morning, but it's just difficult to do now. So I found these little, they're like Morningstar Farms microwavable breakfast sandwiches, but they're meatless. They're like, it's like a veggie sausage patty. Egg and cheese on like a little flatbread, and they're really good. But it takes 90 seconds of cooking. Go try them if you want to. But the main reason I wanted to bring it up is I was curious. Like, do you ever, as someone who like is a like a person who eats meat and doesn't have any issue with it, like eat a vegetarian option every now and then, or like seek out like a meatless option every now and then, like just to make yourself feel better? Because I do that sometimes.
There was about 18 months ago. Like I started to try, and I got some stuff. I don't know if it was like little microwave burritos or something, or I tried something and I was like, I don't know if I can do it, man. I don't. So I gave up pretty quickly, but I feel like I should try again. Like, are you saying try again?
It depends on what it is, right? Like vegetarian sausage patty, I think is more or less tastes like you're eating a regular sausage patty. And like, I've had some of like the veggie burgers that, like I know I'm not eating a burger, but it still tastes good. So like, I don't mind eating them, but like I've definitely had some other things where just like, you're not tricking me. This is terrible. Or like, it's not even like if you're trying to trick me, that's one thing, but this doesn't taste good. So like I'm a little picky with it, but I try to mix it up.
Yeah. I got to try again. I'll try the breakfast sandwiches. All right. So I got a prop for mine, 'cause I've been eating these for a while. So I just wanted to show everybody I got them at Costco. They are called Sunrise Energy Bars, and they're like organic granola bars. I'm not like an organic guy, but they're so good. they're just like oatmeal and like, I don't even know what else is in there on these things, but they're better than like a packaged granola bar. Rolled oats, flax seeds, quinoa, coconut, pumpkin seeds, but they taste so good. So I just want to tell you, like, go to Costco. Organic Sunrise Energy Bars, just like just oatmeal-y. Like it kind of tastes like an oatmeal cookie. So I love oatmeal. Like that's my favorite kind of cookie. So like I'm super into it, but I guess like its carbs are pretty low and it's like a good snack in the middle of the day. I don't know.
Yeah.
Great, Doug. Doug discovered granola bars. Wow.
Congratulations. Thanks
for the great recommendation. Yeah. But you know how does it Costco? But it's like sometimes, and no, you asked if there's chocolate.
Yeah.
I think chocolate ruins oatmeal. Uh-oh. I think the flavors do not mesh at all. So I do not demand raisin with my oatmeals. I actually prefer a straight oatmeal cookie, no raisins, but sometimes you run across the oatmeal with the chocolate and it's insidious. I think it destroys the entire idea of what's going on there. So thank goodness there's no chocolate.
I think you're coming at it from the wrong point of view, because most people come at it from like, I can eat chocolate and not feel bad about it. You're like, I want my oatmeal. Get this chocolate out of here.
A little bit of chocolate goes a long way for me. Like I definitely prefer an oatmeal cookie to a chocolate chip cookie. So
that probably puts you in the rather low percentile of humans.
Yeah. So that, take that into account while I'm recommending the quinoa flaxseed oatmeal bars. All right. What are you thinking about?
So you play Wordle?
I used to, but I don't, but my family still does.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I used to play it like every day, and I occasionally remember like, oh, I should play Wordle today. And I play it like once a week, maybe. But there's been all these like spinoffs, like some official and some not. And this one actually, it's called Bandle. Like, they're just like playing on the title, but it's not anything like Wordle, but it's like a music puzzle thing.
Oh,
that I really enjoyed playing. And I want to put it on people's radars. Maybe it's incredibly well known and I'm an old man and don't realize that, but the way it's set up is like you have five guesses similar to Wordle, but like each guess adds a different piece of the music to a song. So it's like you start with just the drums, and it's like if you know what this song is based off solely hearing the drums, then you can get it in one guess, or you can skip and say like, okay, now here's the drums and here's the bass line. And if you don't get that, like here's the drums, here's the bass line, and here's the lead guitar.
Yeah.
And like you eventually get to the point where like they never give you the lyrics, but they'll give you like background vocals, I think, is as far as they'll take it, up until you get five picks to guess what the song is. And I'm like addicted to it. Oh. It's like, it's incredibly fun. And I guess you have to have like a decently wide knowledge of like popular music, I guess, to get it. But there's like a lot of older songs too that I think most people just sort of have come to know, like walking around hearing it in a shopping mall or something, that I think most people could have fun playing it.
Is it multiple choice or do you type in the name of the song?
You type in the name of the song. Yeah.
Oh, good. And it's the name of the song, not the artist.
Yeah. But like, if you think like I was playing one the other day and I was like, I know what this song is and I know who sings it, but I don't really know the title of the song.
Yeah.
You can type in the band name and it will give you like that's seven songs from that band that are in the game's database.
Okay. Okay.
To choose from. Yeah.
Is this a New York Times thing or is this somebody else?
No, it's just like someone made it. Yeah.
Nice.
But like the play, it's called Bandle, is like a play on words with Wordle, but it's really like, it's nothing like Wordle at all, really. It's just like another kind of quiz game where you have five guesses. I guess that's a similarity, but it's not a New York Times thing, no.
Is it just once a day that you can play it, or can you just kind of do 30 of them? Oh.
No, it's once a day. Yeah.
I definitely saw like somebody on Twitter was talking about their therapist saying like how New York Times word games are ruining people's lives. So be careful.
They keep adding new ones. I feel because my wife plays a lot of them. She's like, oh, did you play this? I was like, I don't know what that is. It's a new New York Times word games. Like, though there's another one. What's that make? 14?
Yeah. I'm good on words. Yeah. So my thing that I'm thinking about is that, so I applied for this thing that was at Northwestern, but it wasn't that you had to go to Northwestern to do it. It was open to any mid-career journalist, they called it. And it was to come to Northwestern University for a week this summer. And it's a George R.R. Martin like writing seminar. So the guy who wrote Game of Thrones, who's a Northwestern graduate. And so it's not like guaranteed that he's going to be there. But the idea is you're a journalist who's never written a published novel, but you have a novel. And you can go here for a week and like be surrounded by people who are doing it. And they'll like have experts there and they'll like try to help you get going on your novel. And so, you know, I'm mid-career, mid-late career. And I have like four books in my head that I have yet to write. And I applied and I had to get references and I had to like finish up part of my book and like send it along. And it actually is during Big 12 Media Days, and it would be good for us to go to Big 12 Media Days for Kings of the North. And I was like, I don't know if I can go. I think I'm going to be at this George R.R. Martin writing camp. Sorry. And they were going to pick 10 people. And then they sent an email and they said, 400 people applied and we didn't pick you. And then they released, they actually ended up picking 12, but they released the list of people who got picked. And one of the guys who got picked to do it is the guy that Mark Ruffalo played in Spotlight. He was on a Pulitzer Prize winning investigative team. And I was like, Mark Ruffalo ain't never played me, man. I'm not
making it. Yet. Not yet.
Oh my God. It's like
Kings of the North movie.
I do have a little bit of a Mark Ruffalo vibe, I think, because like I yell and I scream. Yeah. So, and then everybody else was like the sole bureau chief for the Washington Post. And I was like, they really were not vibing on college football podcast host. So I didn't get it. But then when I saw the list of people, it's just a reminder when you apply for something and you think like, I might be qualified for this. And then you are reminded quite harshly that there are many, many people who do a thing similar to you who are much better at it than you are.
Did you have to be a Northwestern alum to do it?
No. I thought maybe it'd be a little bonus for me. So, no.
I didn't know that George R.R. Martin was a Northwestern grad.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, but as my wife reminds me, it's like, just sit in your freaking office and write the book, you ding dong. You don't have to go to a camp to write a book. It's not required. It's like, I know. But I want to go to a camp.
Camp sounds fun.
Camp sounds fun. And there might be the guy, the dragon guy might be there telling me like, this is a terrible sentence.
And then can he not go there and finish his book? so he can
get more shows. He's procrastinating. He's like, what if I start a writing camp? Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I got to go to this camp. I can't write my own book. All right. That'll do it for this version of Kings of Columbus. We appreciate you guys being with us. We're doing a lot of stuff on Kings of the North. If you watch this, you listen to this, you might want to give Kings of the North a try. We reviewed spring games, Michigan, Notre Dame, Syracuse, some Kyle McCord talk on a Kings of the North this week for sure. And transfer portal stuff and NFL draft stuff from a Northern perspective. It's going to be like a good, interesting night on Thursday for the North, I think, in the first round. So we'll have more of that kind of talk on Kings of the North this week. As always, thanks to our producer, Mike Yorostowski, for making us look good and sound good. He's Bill Landis. I'm Doug LaMaurice. And that was Kings of Columbus.